The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
last week we were interrupted by the elections. So now we'll try to get back on track with our theme, our series. I'm going to be giving a series of talks on the five hindrances. And I suppose this is the fourth talk now I'm going to give. And for those of you who haven't been coming, the five hindrances are a favorite theme in meditation retreats, a favorite theme for people who do mindfulness meditation, because they are a category of mental phenomena, distractions, that make it very hard to meditate. If these come up, the mind kind of gets swept away in their current and pull us this way and that. And so, because they're very common, then the Aikido of mindfulness practice is not to dismiss them or attack them or ignore them, but in a certain way turn towards them and get to know them better. And by becoming familiar with them, then they lose some of their allure, some of their seduction, some of the power they have over us. And also as we turn towards them and understand them, then we can understand what needs to be done to correct for them or to work with them or somehow what we need to do so we can get the upper hand and rather than being swept away in their current. And these five hindrances, there's actually seven because two of them are paired items. So the first is sense desire. The second is ill will. And the topic for today is usually in English we use the word sloth and torpor, and not a word that we... I don't think sloth is a word we often use. Maybe torpor is a little more common. And then the fourth hindrance is restlessness and worry. And the fifth one is doubt. So today's topic is sloth and torpor, dullness and lethargy. They're all big topics. And this is a big topic as well. And it covers, there's a narrow definition of it, and there's a wider definition. Each of these hindrances is a narrow definition and a wider definition. The narrow definition is what the Buddha said. And the wider definition is how it's expanded to include a bigger range of distractions than the narrow kind of words that the Buddha used. So, like the first one is sense desire, first hindrance. But many teachers will just call it desire, because desire, no matter, it doesn't have to be sense desire, just any kind of desire, and we get swept off in that current and takes us away. So, in terms of the wider definition of sloth and torpor, it can include sleepiness and fatigue. Just ordinary, everyday kind of sleepiness. End of a long day, you're sleepy. And you have to kind of contend with that if you're trying to meditate at that point. I've read somewhere that 20% of Americans are fatigued. Does that seem reasonable? 20% of you are fatigued? Yeah. More. I also read that in America there's a high percentage of people who have sleep deprivation, don't sleep enough. Some because they have some kind of physical issue. Some people because they don't give themselves enough sleep. They stay up too late and then they get up early to go to work or whatever, and they're always kind of trying to narrow how much the sleep they can get. And so, and then there's people who are deeply fatigued, not because of lacking sleep, but because of how they live. If we're constantly worrying, worry takes a lot of energy. In fact, I've noticed sometimes that I need less sleep when I'm concentrated on some one particular thing. And not just, you know, on retreat where I'm, you know, concentrated on meditation, but if I'm working on some writing project, for example, and I'm really concentrated, really focused on my project, and the days where I spend a few hours doing that, I need less sleep that night. And I think part of the reason is that a concentrated mind, even though the energy is going into it, a cleanly concentrated mind expends less energy than a worried mind, or a mind that's scattered or fragmented, going off in many different directions. So people who are chronically anxious, go around life being anxious about all kinds of things, are expending a lot of energy. And that energy, not just mental energy, but physical energy, as the muscles in the body tense up in different ways and struggle against each other. And so it's not surprising that people who are constantly anxious would also be deeply fatigued. If you go on meditation retreat, it's very common for people to be surprised by how much fatigue they're carrying along with them. Sometimes you can kind of override the fatigue by just being busy and keep yourself distracted and engaged, hyped up. And then you go on retreat and you can't do the usual hyped up kind of things anymore. I mean, you can't even walk fast or talk fast, or, you know, just there you are, you know. And so then for many people, the first couple of days in retreat is a chance for the fatigue to catch up to us. And then people will often kind of nap the first days or be exhausted the first days and just kind of just to feel it. And then if you go a little bit deeper in meditation and kind of the surface fatigue, some people also discover that it's not just kind of generalized fatigue in their body, kind of sleepiness or whatever, but there's can be a very, very deep weariness in the brain, in the mind, in the thinking mind. The poor mind is exhausted. I mean, you can get all the sleep you want in the world, completely rested that way, but because of the incessant movement of the mind, being anxious and desiring and hating and doing all this activity, there sometimes can discover very, very deep kind of exhaustion in the mind. So that also needs to be settled out and recover from that. So there's those kinds of fatigues and kind of sleepiness. There's also a different kind of fatigue or tiredness, or not fatigue, but kind of a drowsiness or dullness that can happen. And that can be psychological. It can be because of how our more deeply psychological as a reaction to what's going on around us. So, for example, frustrated desire. Some people, if their desire is frustrated enough, will get fatigued or tired or dull or numb or shut down or some great variety like that. It's just, you know, to have a very strong current of desire, of wanting something, wanting, and that you really want to do something or want to have something or something, and reality doesn't cooperate. You can't do it. It just, sometimes things shut down and get tired. I've noticed this occasionally in parenting. You know, it's not exactly what I want to do, you know, parenting, you know, after the sixth hour of, you know. And not a few parents talk about how their IQ seems to drop. And they don't. It's not a joking thing. It's recognized. Their IQ kind of drops when the kids are in their early ages, you know, toddlers and all that. And some of it, I think, is just kind of this. Maybe it's shock. But there's a kind of I think it's a certain kind of dullness that sets in because of there's not so much stimulation, intellectual stimulation or adult stimulation. Sometimes spend a lot of time with kids. But also, I've noticed in myself that there are other things I want to do, and sometimes I've noticed when I'm wanting to do other things besides, then my mind sometimes gets kind of weary or tired, and if I finally stop doing the thing that's, you know, that's interrupting what I want to do, I get more energy back. And this is not speaking well about myself, you know. It isn't that, you know, I should have free rein to do what I want to do. I should be able to let go. better. But sometimes it's hard to do that. So frustrated desire for some people can produce dullness, lethargy. Sometimes it's resistance. Something comes along that it isn't that so much we're frustrated in the desire, but we don't want to do what's coming down the road. We don't want to do what's being asked of us. Perhaps someone comes to talk to us and we'd rather not have a conversation with that person or about that topic. And so it's tiring for us or dulling, and sometimes there's a shutdown. So resistance can be a source of dullness in the mind or lethargy. And it's most obvious, I think, in children, where you ask your children to do something they don't want to do, and suddenly they're so tired. Well, it's amazing. Their shoulders drop, and their feet. Suddenly, their feet are 30 pounds each, and they're dragging them along, and then somehow circumstances change, or a friend comes over to play with them, or something, and just. Where do they get all that energy? In 5 minutes it's turned, or 1 minute, or in a second for a little kid. And there can be plenty of, we've gotten all the sleep we need, and we're not tired that way. Maybe we're not fatigued in some deep kind of way. But there is. So there's lots of energy available. But sometimes that energy is shut down or not available because of psychological reactions we've had to what's going on around us, what's going on. So it can be resistance, it can be frustration. It could also be a certain kind of defensiveness. There are some people, you see it in babies, that if baby gets overstimulated, they go asleep. It's a nice thing to do. It's protective. But adults, apparently adults do this also. And the only place I see it really as adults is on meditation retreats, where sometimes because of the dropping of kind of the surface lid on our consciousness, some of the deeper unresolved issues that a person is carrying with them, sometimes for a lifetime, will bubble up. And sometimes these deeper things that may be long forgotten, or maybe not forgotten, just kind of there's been resistance held suppressed for a long time, sometimes it's too much for the mind to handle all at once. And so it seemingly what happens is that in order to protect ourselves from it or resist it, people will fall asleep. I've known some people occasionally who've kind of didn't stop falling asleep until they discovered what it was that they were holding back. Sometimes it's sometimes it comes with a memory of some trauma that happened as a child, and they get flooded with that memory, and then they wake up, and then there's not a problem anymore of being sleepy. But there was a transition before that it came to the surface where we just fell asleep. I'm very respectful of that kind of falling asleep in meditation, because somehow the mind, the psyche, kind of knows when you're ready. And so just keep meditating and nod off. And then at some point you could do your best to the practice, don't worry about it. And then at some point you'll be ready and you open up to that part of you. Yeah, I'm not a believer in just kind of busting into the unconscious. and just kind of, opening all up at once. Related to frustration, it could be disappointment, great disappointment. Another thing that leads to kind of sleepiness and tiredness, I haven't quite covered it yet, and that is a lot of people do live hyped up lives and always busy, always doing something. Some people, I call it the caffeine of the soul, desire and aversion. Some people pump themselves up with a lot of desire. Some people pump themselves up with a lot of aversion. And some people do it with fear. People like to apparently go to fear movies. I never understood it, but But I guess they feel really alive then. I don't know. Maybe some of you will explain it to me someday. But they get energy from these things. And some people get energy from being praised. Some people get energy from being criticized. But if there's no caffeine of the soul, desire and aversion is not operating, or if we're not neither being praised nor criticized, some people don't get juiced. And they fall asleep. They get tired. You see that. It's very sad sometimes in social conversations where if someone doesn't mean anything for someone else, the person is not you're not going to get something from that person that you want, praise or advancement or something, and that person's also not going to be criticizing you or a danger to you, then the person is maybe boring or just dull or kind of not interesting. And so sometimes this kind of lethargy or dullness sets in, and it's very sad, especially to be in the recipient end of that. So when desire and aversion settle down, the first two hindrances settle down, some people find that what follows in there is sloth and torpor, dullness, drop of energy. And it's almost like a transition some people need to go through, because just like with caffeine, that's why I like that analogy. Some people, when they stop drinking caffeine, have to go through withdrawal 2 or 3 days. So if you stop using desire and aversion, sometimes you have to go through withdrawal as you make that transition, where you find some more natural energy to stay alert and awake. So I've tried to talk a little bit about kind of the physical causes of sloth, torpor, fatigue, dullness, drowsiness. There can also be then psychological causes or psychological reaction to things. And then the third form of sloth and torpor, it can be called meditative sloth and torpor. And that's where meditative sloth and torpor is a sloth and torpor, the dullness that arises, and not because of some kind of psychological issues or not because of not getting enough sleep, but rather because of some imbalance in meditation itself. So there's plenty of people who associate meditation with getting calm. And then because of that, some people are pushing the calm factor as they meditate. Some people, as they meditate, are soothing themselves. Like the breath can be kind of soothing. And so they soothe themselves. Ah, 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 ah. And if you push the calming too far, you'll fall asleep. And meditation is not only about becoming calm. It's about becoming calm and alert. And alert means energized. Healthy energy. Not hyped up, but there's a very healthy clarity and energy that comes along. And so if we follow the path of calm, or if we somehow sit too long and without enough energy kind of being aroused, then we start falling asleep. Or getting duller and duller. And it's a very common phenomenon for meditators, because often meditation brings calm. And as we get calmer and calmer, sometimes the mind, we kind of let go of the alertness, we kind of lower our, I don't know if that's the right analogy, the right expression for meditation, but we lower our guard. You know, we're not kind of so alert or careful anymore, we're not attentive anymore. Oh, this is so nice. Sometimes calm is very pleasant and enjoyable. Wow, finally I've arrived. Meditation has been a chore for me for the last few months. Now finally, it's so pleasant and so calm and so nice. I'll just drift here and so nice. And then we don't notice that we're starting to think about something. And the mind kind of goes off and off and off and off. And we're still in a very pleasant state. But really, primarily what the mind is doing is drifting away in some wonderfully calm, nice, pleasant thought. And you can spend, you know, a long time thinking you're meditating, but not. You know, because you've kind of been carried away in this calm kind of stupor. Sometimes in meditation it's called sinking mind. The energy and alertness of the mind sinks and drops. And it's something that meditators have to be very attentive of. So these are some of the kind of causes for sloth and torpor. The effect it has on us is the mind can sometimes feel tired. The body can be tired. There can be a lack of desire, wish to engage effort, to make effort in practice. Or there can be all the desire in the world, but the mental factors cannot be aroused. You just can't get yourself kind of... I've had the experience of kind of being somehow clear and not being sleepy. Sitting in meditation, being clear and not sleepy. But somehow the mind, the functioning of the mind, the inner functioning of the mind, the different factors of the mind that have to operate, were kind of dull, and there wasn't any energy in them to kind of do the meditation practice, to be mindful. There's something deliberate in the mind that has to be engaged to be mindful, and that deliberateness just couldn't, I couldn't get it up. I could have stopped meditating, and I could have gone about my life and not been tired, but there's some kind of deep, deep kind of dullness that I couldn't get this aroused and up and going. Other times where it's not, I'm just kind of globally tired and sleepy and just very dull. And when I was, for a year actually, I worked as a fast order cook and at Green's Restaurant in San Francisco. And I would get up in the morning and meditate at the Zen Center, and then I would go to work, and then I'd come back and meditate at 5:30 in the evening. And the first half of every afternoon meditation was like this. I was nodding and just dropping. And it would always last 20 minutes. And after 20 minutes, I was awake. I was alert. And I don't think it was just a matter that I was getting a nap, which probably I was. But I felt it was deeper than a nap, because I felt so much, when I finally came to after 20 minutes, I was really clear and present. And I think I was cleansing off the not the tiredness of the day, but the various holding patterns of the day, the various kinds of stresses of the day that had built up. And that was a very deep way for me to kind of release, discharge all that. And then once it was discharged, I was awake. But that's just another way of another manifestation of dullness, tiredness in meditation, is just nodding off, dropping off. And my great dropping off story was I was at Tassajara, the Zen monastery, living down there for a few years. And it was my job to, for a while, to ring the bell at the end of the meditation sessions. And were you three laughing already? I suspect you think that I forgot to ring the bell. No. No, I don't think I ever forgot to ring the bell at the right time. But sometimes I would have it was so ingrained somehow. Maybe I was kind of sleeping, but after the 40 minutes, I'd wake up and ring the bell, just right on time. That was good. But they had this big bell. They still have it, this big bell. It's about, I don't know how big, you know, maybe 2.5 feet tall and 2.5 feet wide. It's a big bell, like this shape here, right? But, you know, 10, you know, I don't know, 4 times bigger or something. Big, big brass thing. And the person who rings the bell has to sit in front of that bell. So you're sitting there. It's, you don't have a little distance from you. So I was sitting, meditating during the meditation session, and then I nodded off, and so I fell forward, and my forehead hit the bell. Bong. The bell that ends the period of meditation is a much smaller, high-pitched bell. So people knew it wasn't the end of this. People were waiting for the small bell, not the big bell. Bong. So everybody knew what happened to Gil. But then I gave myself some credit because it was a 40-minute period of sitting. And then, so that 40-minute period of sitting, I did it a second time. And why I gave myself credit was I was relaxed enough to fall asleep again after the first time. I hadn't gotten upset or anxious, or I hadn't gotten worried about what people were going to think about me. I was just pretty relaxed, so I did it again. But we have a smaller bell here, so. So it's a common phenomena, and so people who meditate need to learn how to work with it, how to adjust for it. Now, some of the things like sleepiness, physical sleepiness, for example, sometimes you need more rest. Some people need to sleep more than they need to meditate. Sleep is really important. Getting a nap. Some people who meditate early in the morning and found themselves kind of drowsy and sleepy in the mind, maybe they shouldn't meditate first thing when they get up. Some people are slower in waking up than other people, and so maybe you need your shower or your breakfast or something, or coffee or something, before it makes sense to meditate. Some people are more like night people. Maybe it makes more sense to meditate in the evening. So we have to kind of look at our patterns and see what makes sense for us, for who we are. The other thing is sometimes you need to do something to stimulate yourself. My teacher in Burma, Pandita, he told me, "Gil, never do sitting meditation without doing walking meditation first." And so for a long time, I would get up when I did my early morning meditation. I would actually get up and do walking meditation for 5 or 10 minutes first, and then I would sit. And the walking meditation kind of got a nice kind of energy flowing in order for me to sit and practice. Things like sitting up straighter. Things that can help you get sleepy in meditation is if you're too comfortable. What? I thought meditation was about becoming comfortable. I meditate on my couch. No wonder you fall asleep all the time. So if you get too comfortable, so it'd be too warm, it's better to be a little bit cool and I don't know if you want to be uncomfortable, but you don't want to be really comfortable. You know, just lay in a meditate in a bed of pillows. You need to sit up straight. And so sometimes sitting up straighter can be very helpful. Sit up straighter, straighter than you normally do. Just that sometimes can sometimes get energy. If you're capable of it, and not everyone is capable of it by any means, but the half lotus position where you cross your legs in half lotus and full lotus are yogic postures that bring a really good energy. So you sit up there in full lotus and I've done that in order to stay awake. Mostly I've done it when I've been a teacher sitting in front of everyone, and it just didn't seem too becoming to be nodding off too much. That is, though, some of you have seen me fall asleep up here. So, sitting in, some people find that helpful. It gets good energy going if you can do it. Washing your face with cold water, your face, your neck, your hands, and your feet before you meditate can stimulate, that'll keep you awake. If you're really tired or sleepy or dull, it's said that getting a lot of light, luminosity, light, can be helpful. Like, so you open your windows, curtains, and get sunlight coming in, or turn on a lot of lights in your house. You want to have a lot of light. You can even open your eyes when you meditate to get the light coming in. Even with the eyes closed, the eyelids are pretty thin, and the light can come in. That can help. The sometimes it's interesting to, when there's psychological resistance, to ask some questions of yourself. Reflect. One interesting question is, if I wasn't sleepy, if I wasn't so dull, what would I be experiencing? And occasionally, when people have asked themselves that question, then I have to face the fact that I'm so depressed. Oh, then I have to face the fact that I have all these regrets about something long time ago. Oh, you know, something comes up. So if I wasn't so sleepy now, so dull, what would I have to face? What would I have to experience? Is one that sometimes brings energy for people. Another is, you know, to look a little bit about the desires that might be frustrated. What is it that I really want here? And then to reevaluate your desires, your wishes. Is this really, you know, what is it about my desires here? What is it that I want? Is this really appropriate? Am I able to let go? How can I let go more deeply? So rather than keep trying to wake up or to deal with the sleepiness, we have to deal with the frustrated desire. We have to deal with the resistance. Otherwise, we're dealing with the wrong thing. Another thing to do, which is much more in the line of meditation, mindfulness meditation, is to arouse more mental energy for the practice. So, for example, if people who use mental noting as a technique for mindfulness, you note what you're aware of, to note a little bit more vigorously in the mind, this silent vocalization in the mind, you note a little bit more vigorously. Or you do mental notes more frequently. So, like, you know, say you're doing mental noting, you're aware of breathing in, breathing out, a sound of traffic, an itch, an aching knee, feeling the ache. So that's one speed. Or you could go a little bit more notes. You can go breathing in, hearing, aching, and kind of pick up the speed a little bit, maybe by saying it two or three times each note rather than just once. And it can seem like a lot of work. It can seem kind of even unmeditative to do that. But if you're really just falling asleep or dull or just nothing else is working, it's a great technique, great way to get you over a hump and get yourself kind of the juices going again. So what else? Sloth and torpor. Another is to, it's really important to recognize its presence. As I mentioned earlier, it's possible to not recognize it's there, to kind of be lulled into the comfort of sloth and torpor, the dullness of it, and then kind of drift off, and the mind sinks more and more. So it's very important to learn to recognize and see it. Oh, this is what it is. And then it's very interesting in mindfulness practice to become a student of sloth and torpor. So get interested. What is this feel like? What does it feel in the cheeks? You know, the cheeks are a little bit hot. Cheeks, maybe eyes are a little bit that sandy, gritty feeling, and a little bit heavy. And the cheeks might be sometimes a little bit hot, maybe warm, or a little heavy maybe as well. Or the mind feels like sludge, or, you know, like really thick molasses, or sometimes there's no energy in the body. The chi is not there in the body, and so, you know, if the energy is going good in the body holds itself up nicely by itself. When the energy is not there, and you don't pay attention to your posture, the body will collapse. And so sometimes coming back, just focusing on your posture and reasserting your posture over and over and over again until finally the chi, the energy, just kind of kicks in, and then you find yourself kind of here. It's useful with sloth and torpor outside of meditation, when you're not meditating, to spend a little bit of time contemplating and reflecting what are the causes and conditions for your sloth and torpor? Is it the lack of sleep? Is it too much spending too much time in worry and anxiety? Is it living under too much stress? Is it resistance? Is it frustration? Is it disappointment? Or has it something to do with meditation practice? The factors there, getting too calm, not making enough effort, getting complacent. There was a period of time where I fell asleep every meditation. Every one. I just would always fall asleep. And I didn't get out of it until I learned, I discovered that I was complacent. I'd been meditating for some time, and meditation had gotten very comfortable for me. My body was no longer uncomfortable. My mind was no longer uncomfortable. I was basically content and happy and settled. And I became complacent. And so I wasn't putting effort in anymore. I wasn't making a good effort to be present and show up. And so without that effort, I just kind of nodded off. Hit that bell. So, fatigue, sloth and torpor. I think it can be a great teacher for many people. So I think it's really worthwhile taking a deeper look at your fatigue and tiredness and dullness. Talk to friends about it. Go for a nice long walk and really think about it. Explore it. And really kind of explore it in meditation itself. See what's going on there. Understand. Some people will learn a lot about themselves in that domain. And the final thing I'd like to say about sloth and torpor is relating it to what's called the three roots of unskillful behavior in Buddhism. Buddhism says that there's three primary roots to unskillful, unhealthy mental behavior. There's greed, there's hate, and there's delusion. And the first hindrance of sensual desire has its root in greed. The second hindrance, ill will, has its root in hate. Sloth and torpor, the last three hindrances, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, and doubt, have their root in delusion, in confusion. There's something about the mind getting confused that can be very conducive to or very supportive of the mind getting very dull. And one of the things we can be very confused about is the dullness itself. We can be seduced by it. But it kind of lends itself to kind of poor thinking, not thinking very well about what's going on. So wake up. And to translate the word Buddhism into English, in a pure English kind of Englishism, we would call it, we should really call it wake-up-ism. Because the word Buddha means to wake up, the one who's awake. And the ism is ism, right? So the wake-up-ism. So please practice, please be devoted to wake-up-ism. Stay awake. So thank you.